Welcome back to Shortcut to Slim, a research podcast on diet and nutrition. I'm your host, Lindsay S. Nixon from GetMealPlans.com. And in today's episode, we're debunking the whole raw foods are more nutritious myth. A few weeks ago, I sent a newsletter to the Meal Mentor community titled, Are Frozen Vegetables Unhealthy? For convenience, I posted the newsletter on the Meal Mentor blog, and you can catch a direct link from show notes on getmealplans.com/podcast. But I'll recap quickly right now and end the suspense. Fresh vegetables aren't so fresh. It takes 7 to 16 days to transport fresh produce, which in and of itself doesn't sound so fresh, but to ensure the food isn't rotten by the time it gets to the store, the produce has to be harvested prematurely. Sidebar, if there's anything I hope to convey with this podcast, it's that we can't outsmart or cheat nature without consequences. But back to my point, 7 to 16 transport days and premature harvesting. Well, compare that to frozen, which, well, frozen fruits and vegetables are harvested only at their peak and within a few hours. This freezing aspect is important because it creates a time capsule, a leaky one, but taste and nutrition, that whole value, it stays with frozen fruits and vegetables. It's mostly preserved while fresh produce degrades constantly, losing their important vitamins and nutrients as the clock ticks, 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 ticks. A 2010 study by the Institute for Food Research concluded that fresh produce loses up to 45% of their essential nutrients farm to table. And for a list of the top 10 best fruits and vegetables to buy frozen, check out that blog post I mentioned on getmealplans.com. Now, I know what you're thinking because I was thinking this too. What if I buy from the farmer's market or a farm stand or I grow it myself? Yes, those items would have degraded less and are probably more nutritious than frozen. So haven't I just admitted that raw foods are nutritionally superior? Not quite. In episode 2, Should You Track Your Calories?, I discussed briefly how every calorie is not absorbed the same way. That by cooking or processing our food, we are better able to absorb the nutrients and also the calories in that food. And we'll get to the energy theory of cooking and how cooking our food made us evolve into humans in a future episode. But for now, let's begin with a fun fact. Humans are the only animals that cook their food. Indeed, societies all around the world, past and present, practice cooking. It's one of the very few human universals. In Catching Fire, How Cooking Fire Made Us Human, Richard Wrangham hypothesized, are humans an ordinary animal that enjoys the taste and security of cooked foods, or have we evolved to depend on them? Raw foodists claim plants contain living or active enzymes which, if eaten raw, operate for our benefit inside our bodies. As such, food can't be cooked above certain temperatures. It's kind of a debatable thing, but generally around 45 degrees Celsius, which is 113 degrees Fahrenheit, because doing so destroys the life force of the enzyme. I have to quote Wrangham here. To scientists, the idea that food enzymes contribute to digestion or cellular function in our bodies is nonsense because these molecules themselves are digested in our stomach and small intestines. Even if a food enzyme survived our digestive systems, their own specific metabolic functions are too specialized to allow them to do anything useful in our bodies. In case you fell asleep just now, the whole idea of living foods is not accepted by physiologists. Reviewing countless real-world studies and volumes, and I do mean volumes, of book by anthropologists, some dating back all the way to the late 1800s and early 1900s, Wrangham found that home cooking was the norm and eating raw was a poor alternative demanded by circumstance, such as when people were out hunting all day. This was true even for hunting and gathering populations, including the Inuit Eskimos. They too cooked their food and preferred it that way. This is remarkable considering that the Eskimos had no bark or branches to make fire most of the year and basically had to use animal fat as burning oil to slowly cook their food all day long. They also ate deer poop, which I just had to throw in there for my paleo listeners. Wrangham was unable to find any report of people living long-term on a raw, wild food diet. But he did provide a generous anthology of groups of people who were forced to endure an all-raw diet, whether it was purely plants, purely raw meat, or a combination of raw meat and raw plants. I was particularly captivated by the Robertson family, who survived for 38 days in a dinghy after a whale sunk their ship in 1972. The family survived eating mostly raw fish and turtles and doing some funky stuff with a makeshift enema to avoid dehydration. But anyway, all of the stories that he shared in his book each came to the same conclusion or suggestion that raw diets do not provide enough energy, even when there is no shortage of food available. These people simply couldn't extract enough of the nutrients or calories from raw foods. This was even true with the shipwrecked Robertsons. They caught more food than they could eat, and despite being given more food than everything else, Neil Robertson was disturbingly thin when he was rescued. They were also constantly starving, which was my experience on a raw food diet. I was always hungry. Even when I ate more calories than I biologically needed, I was not satisfied. I lived in a state of feeling hungry even when my stomach was uncomfortably full and I couldn't actually eat more without being in extreme pain. The Robertsons said that they fantasized about cooked foods constantly, and I remember Zamperini reporting something similar in the book Unbroken. He was a World War II survivor, and that's a great book, and it was also a movie, but he and his kind of mates in the raft all really fantasized about cooked foods. And not that I'm comparing a juice fast to what all these people went through, but when I tried to juice fast, I became obsessed with pizza. I couldn't stop thinking about it, which seemed really odd to me because I don't particularly like pizza. And in all the times I've tried dieting in the past, even really weird dieting, I didn't have that level of obsessive food thoughts or cravings. It was a whole new experience, this obsession I had with pizza. Anyway, Wrangham explained that the raw diet supported survival, but it also brought out a sense of starvation. He also said the lack of evidence for longer-term survival on wild raw foods suggests that even in extremis, people need their food cooked. I mentioned in a previous episode that any given food has a set bioavailability. That is, how many calories, vitamins, or minerals it offers, but that even in the best conditions, we may not absorb all that it is offering. And that's what Wrangham is getting at here. That's the energy theory of cooking, which I'll discuss more deeply in the next episode. For now, the summation is that by cooking our food, we are better able to absorb the nutrients and also the calories in that food. Admittedly, when I first started learning about this, I thought it sounded a lot like negative calories, this idea that a food requires more energy to be digested than the food itself provides. And here's the fancy scientific lingo for that. The thermic effect or specific dynamic action, the caloric cost of digesting the food, would be greater than its food energy content. There is no scientific evidence to support negative calories, but there is evidence that we are unable to absorb the nutrients and also the calories in food, which I'll talk about more next time. To wrap up for now, Wrangham and a recent study out of Germany unanimously concluded that a strict raw food diet cannot guarantee adequate energy supply. Which I interpret as, even if raw food was magically more nutritious, and this episode definitely poked a lot of holes in that, just refer back to the beginning about frozen versus fresh, we humans can't assimilate enough from it anyway, and thus are setting ourselves up for hunger, misery, energy depletion, and nutrient deficiency. It's sort of like eating tree bark or cardboard, but maybe small amounts of whole raw foods, such as a big green salad with a cooked meal, can help ease the pain of dieting and weight loss by providing more physical and visual volume without disturbing the needed caloric deficit to lose weight, since we won't assimilate everything. I need to think more on this. But it's true for all. Cooked food is easier to digest than raw, and all animals grow better on a cooked food diet. Just ask any farmer. Wrangham suggests that this is why domestic pets become fat. The calories and processed pellets are so much more easily absorbed. It's similar to my orange versus Dorito example in the last episode, meaning you might not absorb every calorie in an apple, but you're probably going to absorb every calorie in a Dorito. The theory of cooking is really amazing. Let's circle back quickly to Wrangham's original hypothesis. Are humans an ordinary animal that enjoys the taste and security of cooked foods, or have we evolved to depend on them? Humans, unlike all other animals, have adapted to cooked foods. The reduced size of our digestive system compared to our ape cousins, for example, limits our effectiveness at digesting raw food. However, that shortened digestive system enables us to process cooked foods with exceptional proficiency. This was great news from an evolutionary standpoint, and I'll explain that a little bit more in the next episode, but it's not so good news when we consider what that means for processed foods and the obesity epidemic. Finally, and this point is more for my non-vegan listeners, but applies to plants as well, let's not forget that cooking also reduces the risk of eating toxins or pathogens that make us sick and can kill humans. Animals just don't have these same constraints. They'll eat roadkill covered in maggots. I've seen it. We all have driving on the highway. They're not worried about salmonella, and they don't starve on a raw diet. This distinction is what led Wrangham, and eventually me too, and hopefully now you as well, to conclude that humans need cooked foods. To be clear, Wrangham doesn't say it's impossible to live on raw food, but that today's voluntary raw foodists can only thrive in rich modern environments where they depend on eating exceptionally high-quality foods that they don't forage for themselves and that are often elaborately prepared with special equipment to increase their energy value and absorption, which is his very British way of saying they're cheating. By the way, there's still one more compelling reason to eat frozen fruits and vegetables, which are lightly cooked. Did you forget we started talking about frozen vegetables, the nutrition superstars they are in this episode? Frozen produce is cheaper, but that's not the added reason. Frozen consumes less resources. The Natural Resource Defense Council released a report stating 40% of food in the United States goes totally uneaten. This means that Americans are throwing out the equivalent of $165 billion each year, and that this uneaten food ends up rotting in landfills as the single largest component of U.S. municipal solid waste. Getting food from the farm to our fork also eats up 10% of the total U.S. energy budget, uses 50% of the U.S. land, and swallows 80% of all freshwater consumed in the United States. Those numbers are quite literally hard to swallow when you realize almost half rots in a landfill. NDRC notes that reducing food losses by 15% would be enough to feed more than 25 million Americans every year. Increasing the efficiency of our food system is a triple bottom line solution, and buying frozen as well as meal planning and making sure that every ingredient you buy is used, which we do with the meal plans, is the easiest way you can help us get there. There's a link to the full NDRC report on getmealplans.com/podcast. And if you are enjoying this podcast, please leave a review on iTunes or share it with one of your friends. And speaking of friends, I'd like to give a shout out to @uglyfruitandveg on Twitter and Instagram. You should definitely follow them, and I commend them for their ongoing efforts in getting all of us to buy food because it's edible and not worrying about whether or not it looks pretty. I'm Lindsay S. Nixon. Thanks for listening to Shortcut to Slim, brought to you by Meal Mentor.